Good afternoon, everyone. This is a very good time to be looking for significant funds for adaptation and other climate-related types of activities. The world's equity markets are at all-time highs in the United States and in Germany that are not justified by anything in the world economy or in the national economies. So the smart money has left the equity market some time ago. The bond markets, on the other hand, are at their lowest level in a long time, both in the United States and in Germany, as we can see by the benchmark 10-year bonds. So there's not much attraction in that market either. And we get into the 2-year benchmarks. In Europe, they're negative, and extremely negative in Switzerland, the yields on the 2-year benchmark government bonds. This is all due, of course, to the interest rates of the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England and the European Central Bank at less than 0.5%. And the CD rates are also less than 1%. Even the 5-year is hanging under 1%. So we have the negative interest rates for deposits in Denmark and Sweden. The Swiss 3-month target rate is negative. The Japanese commercial paper rate is negative. The European Central Bank deposit rate is negative. So there's not much attraction in the financial markets. Our official development aid is stable at about $146 billion. It arose slightly from 2014 to 2015, but is basically in the same plateau. All of this has led to a situation where the corporations are sitting on a ton of money. So if we look at the S&P 500 index of cash and short-term investments, it's $400 per share. And as you know, they have huge amounts of shares. So that is a ton of money that the S&P 500 companies are sitting on. And a similar situation exists in Europe. They do not know what to do with the money in those circumstances. Foreign direct investment rebounded in 2015 and was up 36%, as a matter of fact. So that was quite significant, and it's probably related to this corporate money looking for things to do. And the green bonds, very interestingly, reached the $40 billion plateau, when only 2 years ago, in 2013, they were still at about the $10 billion level, where they had been at for some time. So it could be that the green bond market is about to take off, which is highly significant for us. But even at $40 billion, there's very good opportunities. And of course, this is more the rise of the commercial green bonds than the World Bank green bonds, which are also an option. And we come to the total climate of finance, the total climate of finance. We get the famous onion of the SCF with its different layers. And we see that it's from $345 to over $600 billion a year if we add everything there. But we all know that there's imbalance between adaptation and mitigation. Adaptation is always on the short end of the stick in every fund you can think of. Supposedly now in the Green Climate Fund, that I'm an advisor of, we're supposed to get to 50-50. But that discussion is ongoing of how to interpret that 50-50. We have found in Nicaragua, in our practice, that an excellent strategy for adaptation mitigation is reforestation of degraded forests and avoided deforestation. Please ignore 1D and avoided. It was overenthusiastic there. Avoided deforestation. And that this is a way to get mitigation, deforestation, and cut potential loss and damages significantly. And there's support for this. So for example, there's support from the Bond Challenge, which is has as a target 150 million hectares at $36 billion a year is the target. The New York Declaration on Forests, 350 million hectares, 49 billion per year is the target. The ODS 15.3, 2 billion hectares, 318 billion per year, so it's also part of the Sustainable Development Goals. The 20 by 20, which is Latin American, linked to the World Resource Institute, which is 20 million hectares and a total of 855 million. And the Forest Carbon Partnership Fund. And it has an $829 million target for more or less a million hectares. We're participating in the latter two. We have an agreement, initial agreement. We're still going through the hoops, which are extensive and quite rigorous, on the carbon partnership. And it will lead to 55 million in results-based carbon sequestering of 11 million tons in the next 5 years, which is highly significant because Nicaragua last year emitted 4.8 million tons of CO2e. Now, that was down by 2.1 million tons because of our move from 25% renewable energy in 2007 to 56% renewable last year. So we already reduced it by 2.1. So you can see how significant that 11 million is when we're at 4.8%, and that 11 million is in the next 5 years. However, we do not believe in standalone policies. So this reforestation of degraded forests and avoided deforestation must be part of an integral, holistic reforestation and landscaping strategy, which we have, which includes natural reforestation, which is the best kind. How do you do that? We protect better our national forests and reserve areas so that there's not depredation in those areas. We protect better our natural forests by providing firewood from energy forests and industrial wood for construction and furniture building so as to reduce the pressure on the natural forests. Through agroforestry and silvopastoral projects that let farmers and cattle grazers into a win-win situation by having forestry incorporated into their activities, usually on land that has a forestry vocation. And it's, you know, utopian to think you're going to turn the clock back on that, but what you can do is combine. And then we also have the export plantations. We have two Norwegian FDI investor groups that have teak plantations in Nicaragua. And we have Belgian and U.S. groups that, even though it's not forestry, it does sequester CO2 bamboo activities in Nicaragua as well. We also have a strategy of concessions. We've discovered that a poor country, and Nicaragua is the second poorest country in Latin America and the Caribbean, can get infrastructure without money. And this magic is called concessions and design, finance, construct, operate, transfer contracts, DFBOT, which is sort of the British model of improved BOT, in which the person who receives or the firm that receives the concession does everything. And if, when we're in renewable energy, that's also based on a purchasing power agreement of 30 years, so everything becomes very predictable in terms of the income flow. And this can also be linked to green bonds, not only to undertake projects, but also to refinance existing projects and free up funds that can be used in riskier activities by our state-owned enterprises. We're going to go to 90% on the basis of contracted portfolio with regard to the renewable energy. And I might mention that our Grand Interoceanic Canal and Multimodal World and Regional Logistical Center is also a big concession. It's a 50-year concession, renewable for another 50 years, and it is on the basis of design, finance, build, operate, transfer. And that will lead to sub-concessions as well, as, for example, the two big ports and the airport are hived off for other sub-concessions of design, finance, construct, build, operate, transfer, which is part of the financial scheme. Finally, we can say that some things might not have enough toll to be able to repay the investor, so we're working on something that they've done a lot in Australia, which are availability agreements. So, for example, a dredging company does the dredging and does the maintenance of the dredging, and they get a yearly payment for making available this this public service, this public good. I would like to mention two last points, and I think that they're extremely important. I'm very enthused about an Inter-American Development Bank project, or program rather, that has about $190 million deposited in the Central Bank of Nicaragua. They got this, of course, of their AAA rating at current interest rates at a very low rate. And the Central Bank of Nicaragua, in turn, pays them an extremely low rate for depositing that $190 million in the Central Bank of Nicaragua. But those funds are there, and the Central Bank uses them like any other funds, except if there is a hurricane, except if there's a big drought that needs emergency reactions, because the government can draw on that money freely. The moment the money draws on that account, it becomes a loan. So that's the contingency. It's an adaptation to be ready for loss and damages and to be able to cover immediately loss and damages, which solves a big problem. And that was the multilateral development banks with their two-year pipelines were quite useless in emergency situations. But here, this is pre-approved and pre-deposited, and so they become useful on day one because the money can be drawn upon by government. My personal opinion is that that is a flag that we should pick up here in the Standing Committee on Finance and elsewhere and see if every country in the world could have their contingency fund. Because the way we deal with emergencies now, when people in Europe see that people in Mozambique are up to their neck in water, then the government start to react and send some things. We can do better than that, and we can do better in the earthquake situations through this type of activity. And finally, I would like to mention that perhaps the best thing that Jeff and GCF could be doing would be to multiply their resources through guarantee funds. Why can Nicaragua do these concessions? Why can we get $2.9 billion in foreign direct investment to transform our energy sector? Is because we have a good investment climate. We're growing at 5% a year. The exports have gone up by 2.5 times, foreign direct investment by 5 times. We had $286 million in foreign direct investment in 2006. Now it's $1.5 billion with a $10.9 billion contracted portfolio. So, and then this is with macroeconomic stability, 3.8% inflation, and the government deficit 0.7%, and the foreign and the external debt has gone down from 109% of GDP to 40. The internal debt 25 to 8. So all of this creates, I'm 30 seconds away, Tosi. Okay. All of this leads to an investment climate that is conducive to confidence in these types of investments. That's not the case in every country. So in those countries where it's not the case, the change to renewable energy could be achieved, as well as these adaptation types of products, by having a multiplier on our funds available in GCF and JEF that would be a guarantee fund for those countries, which can also earn money. It's like an insurance. You paid, you get that insurance for the investment. It could be a rotating fund. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for providing such useful insight and many creative ideas on how to be able to scale up finance for adaptation action. So at this stage, let me go to Asia. Do you have a presentation, Asia? Yes.
Okay, thank you, Tosi. Thank you, everyone, for allowing us to present today. I'm going to give you a few insights on what we're doing in Africa to finance the impact of climate change, but also what we're planning to do to scale up adaptation financing. For those of you who are not familiar with the African Risk Capacity, or the ARC, it's a specialized agency of the African Union. It has 32 countries in Africa which are member, and the mandate of the ARC, African Risk Capacity, is to help the African Union countries plan, prepare, and respond to the impacts of climate change. So, to do so, we bring together three critical elements. The first one is early warning and monitoring. We have a software, Africa Risk View, that we use that was developed with the United Nations WFP, World Food Program, and that we use to underpin our insurance contracts. We also have contingency planning. We work with countries for between 9 and 12 months to develop contingency plans that will then inform the activities that they will implement when there's a payout. And the last one is insurance. Insurance because the ARC has a mutual insurance company which is called the ARC Insurance Company Limited, which belongs to its member. So as of today, it belongs to Mali, Niger, Senegal, Mauritania, the Gambia, Kenya, Malawi, and it also belongs to Germany and the UK, who have provided initial capitalization in the ARC. In the ARC Limited. And as of today, we have a coverage for drought of about $300 million that we provide to those countries, with more countries coming slowly. So our objective, in line with the G7 Issue Resilience Initiative and the Anticipate, Absorb, Reshape Initiative of the UNSG, is to scale up. And we want to scale up to cover $2 billion in coverage, and that's $1.5 billion for drought, flood, and tropical cyclone, and $500 million for investment in adaptation. And we want to do that through our new facility, which is called the Extreme Climate Facility. I'm going to explain to you now. If you see the slide, you have The bars are the model drought response cost for Niger. Niger is a country that has been part of the ARC for now 3 years. And part of the work that we do with countries is they define the risk profile. So here you have from 1930s to 2013, the bars, which are basically the cost of the response when there's a drought in Niger based on today's cost and today's population. The blue line is the 1 in 5 year drought return period. And the discontinued blue is 1 in 10. For those of you who are not familiar with insurance, what it means is that, for example, if a country chooses a 1 in 5 return period, it means that the insurance is going to be, the premium is going to be a little bit more expensive for this country because the insurance is going to pay, in average, every 5 years. But if a country chooses a 1 in 10 year return period, the insurance is going to be cheaper, but this country will only cover quite significant events that are happening every 10 years, let's say, in average. So what we have realized with looking at our first countries at the Sahel is that what was a 1 in 10 year event in 1930 has become, in the late 80s, it has become a 1 in 5 year event. It means that it's much more expensive, it had become much more expensive for those countries to remain in the pool. And we wanted to preserve the added value of the insurance because the insurance right now has a very, we managed to provide a good value for money for the countries. And with the climate shift we've realized that with extreme events, the premium could go up. And we also know that while we address emergency situations right now, it's also important to think about financing for adaptation, because that's one of the messages that we get from the countries. Sure, we have social safety nets, we have the insurance to scale up those social safety nets, but we also need to have investment funds to invest in adaptation. So that's how we came up with the Extreme Climate Facility, which basically would be a facility that would be based on an index, the Extreme Climate Index, that would take into account extreme heat and extreme precipitation, and that would pay out to countries when a certain threshold would be reached by windows of 5 years. So what this means is that for a country like Niger that would be in the pool, for example, we would manage to, on top of the premium that the country would pay and the insurance that they would get for the normal traditional insurance for the flood, drought events, we would pay out to Niger additional amounts every 5 years if a certain threshold would be reached. So for us, we don't yet know exactly, we're still doing the feasibility studies to see exactly which financial vehicle we're going to use. Are we going to use insurance? Are we going to use CAT bonds? But what we want to do is to blend public and private financing, the same way we do it with the current project, the current product that we have right now. And what we also took on to give you, I think, I still have a little bit of time to see. 2 minutes? Okay. So just to conclude, basically what we want to do with the Extreme Climate Facility is two things. We know that it's there's a debate right now on how to disburse for investment in adaptation to the countries and what amount each country should have. So we want to provide a transparent and objective index that would allow to do that. And the second thing is we want also to our countries to realize the importance of investing in adaptation. They want to do it, but finance is lacking. And I think we've heard that a lot today, and maybe you've talked about it again this morning. So right now, we are planning to start in 2017. So next year, we will start. We are currently doing the feasibility studies with financing from Rockefeller Foundation. And we are having an African-led consortium stress test the Extreme Climate Index. And in April, in Addis Ababa, our countries, which already have insurance policies, met to discuss what kind of adaptation plans they would have in place to be able to benefit from this funding. So, yes, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Asia. And I must say that the African Risk Capacities Initiative I'm very, very fond of. And to tell you the truth, I'm actually a board member of the agency. And like Asia explained, there is an agency which I will say as a conference of the parties and has a little bit of political dimension. And then you have the financial affiliates, which functions on the basis of the best financial practices. And it's really an important initiative because, as you know, most of Africans depends on agriculture. And you can have an event that comes and really depletes all the assets, all the hourly gained social and economic benefits over years of hard work in a single season. So it's important that countries are able to access this type of innovative instruments which can help them edge such a risk. And it's actually changing the narrative because when it happens, it's not yet another African country is going to beg to receive bilateral support, but it's really African countries pooling their risk together and coming up with a sound, coherent instrument that can really help them be on top of the games when climate change affects hits home. A climate change which wasn't caused by them, must I once again underscore. Naresh, yes, maybe one last word, yes.
Can say is that we've already paid out in the Sahel. In 2015, we've paid $26 million in the Sahel because they had significant rainfall deficits. And the payouts arrived in January. So it allowed those countries to have a first response before the humanitarian response could arrive. I think the appeal was only in February, and it was really a breath of air for those ministers of finance who now realize the importance of the ARC and are willing to actually ask the other countries to join so that the pooling effect can be more effective.
Thank you, Asia. And I must say that the current COP president, France, is also very interested in investing in ARC. And I know that you guys have been talking with them. So on top of Germany and the UK. And I must say that ARC also benefited in the past from support from Switzerland, the Rockefeller Foundation. So France is going to join forces in order for this initiative, which is very important for Africa to be scaled up. I think I made it of my pitch for ARC today. So let me go to Naresh now. And you have a presentation also? Or are you just going to make remarks, speaking remarks?
Thank you, Chair.
Oh, you have a presentation, okay.
Good afternoon, colleagues. I'm going to talk about LDC in assessing funding for adaptations, representing least developed country expert group. I am the member of the group as well. Sorry. So question I was asked was, what are the systems that are needed to facilitate expedited access to climate finance for LDC country? As we know, LDC lack the capacity to submit well-designed and ambitious project in a timely manner as some other countries, developing countries, to assess climate finance. Usually, the procedures and criteria for funding are complex and too cumbersome for LDC to meet. For instance, LDC are often challenged with gaps of feasibility studies that need a lot of work and are costly. Therefore, the level of details needed for a small scale and large scale project should be differentiated with the possible exemption of feasibility studies for small and micro scale project. Through extensive experience in supporting the LDC to assess funding for adaptations, the LAKE together with the LDCs, various organizations and experts, developed a set of systems and structure or essential functions that are required to assist countries in undertaking their work successfully. With such structure or systems are in place, LDC will be in a better position to formulate and implement adaptation plans to be able to assess necessary resources, including finance, to do the work. So here I would like to highlight about the essential function of NAP developed by the LAKE, which is basically represent about the best practice for structure and system at the national levels for ensuring a successful process to formulate and implement NAPs. This successful process is functioning smoothly and contributing to the iterative identification of adaptation needs and options. The second one is supporting the successful implementation of adaptations actions involving relevant framework strategy for mobilizing and assessing financial resources, useful at the national level and leads to the achievement of desired outcomes. Addresses the two objectives, the guiding principle defined by COP for the NAP process as well. So with the interest of time, I'm not going to read out the whole presentations because it is going to be uploaded as per our yesterday's discussions. So I would like to draw attention on only number one point, helping governments to provide national leadership and coordination of adaptation efforts. LDC should be enabled to be in a delivery seat when it comes to designing their adaptation projects and program, and be in line with the national needs, strategy, and priorities. LDCs need to have enhanced institutional capacities to meet the international fiduciary standard and environmental and social safeguard of the various climate funds allowing for direct access. There needs to be functional NDA or focal points or NIE to ensure the operationalization of the country ownership principle. Providing support for facilitating the accreditations of national implementing entities for LDC to assess finance directly. This is also the list of essential functions. I would like to draw your attention on number 8. In order to have the right structure for the implementation of the adaptations at all level, one could consider providing support for facilitating the accreditations of national entities for LDC to assess finance directly, providing support to build technical capacity to LDC in the development and financial engineering of bankable project program and implementing them, the readiness program and project preparation support of the adaptation fund and the GCF could other opportunity for the LDCs to further strengthen their capacity to assess flooding. The other question I was asked was the work of the league in strengthening institutional capacity in the LDCs to facilitate their access to adaptation finance. So on the basis, if we see the mandate of the league as per from the COP, these are the mandates. So the league is working for technical support to the country to address the resources to work for the poor and vulnerable people addressing climate change. These are the mandates, and I'm not going to read it out. So League has a vision of the league to guide the support to the LDC and adaptations, and this is the vision of league developed in 29th meeting in March. To guide its work in supporting the LDCs on adaptations. The vision are as follows: the existence of a well-structured adaptation planning process in the LDCs, formulation of robust and good quality of national adaptation plans, implementation of priority adaptation needs identified in the national adaptation plans with funding from Green Climate Fund and other funding sources as well, demonstrable results in building adaptive capacity, strengthening resilience, and reducing vulnerability to climate change in the LDC. So, work plan has been derived from the last meeting, and these are the work plans. I'm not going to talk about long work plan, but expected outcomes are LDC are assessing support for the formulation of national adaptation plan from the GCF and other sources before the end of 2016. Concrete adaptations actions identified through national adaptation plan in the form of policies, projects, programs designated to reduce vulnerability, strengthen resilience, and build adaptive capacity are being implemented through GCF support upon completion of the national adaptation plan. So these are the work plan about how harnessing the GCF resource to formulate the national adaptation plan of the LDC country. So I'm not going to talk about all the things as well, because with the interest of time, so.
Yes, Naresh, you have 2 more minutes.
So. Okay. So this slide also provides a specific objective to be undertaken with the GCF, and activities are engaging the GCF at leg meeting and the events, which is basically about the capacity building for the LDC countries, and regularly sharing of information on relevant products of the results of the leg with the GCF secretariat as a way to facilitate the GCF secretariat, expedite the support to the LDCs on NAPs and NAPAs and other activities, and gaining collection and having monitoring our work experiences and challenging faced by the LDC is also the one of the aspects that LEG is going to conduct during the 16 and 17 work plan. So training and outreach materials, sharing of the information of the relevant products and result of the leg and international practices, good practices from the LDC country to replicate for others about the adaptation work is also one of the priority that leg is going to do. And sharing of experience and challenge faced by, sharing the experience and challenge faced by the LDC in the LDC group is also one of the work program that we are going to conduct. And having said with this, we would like LDC country and leg would like to support to the LDC for adaptations work, especially for poor and vulnerable people to enhance their capacity. And regarding the NAP also, I mean, if we see the NAP progress also, some countries have already started to formulate a NAP process. In Nepal also, we have initiated a process to formulate national adaptation plan having 7 main thematic area and 2 cross-cutting issues. So having said with this, I stop my presentation. Thank you very much.